This is my third budget, if you will, and I do sit on Ways and Means, so I get to see it firsthand. Many things are the same. One of the things that we keep working on is if we can build the economy, we can build the revenues and more to work with. There's not a shortage of needs. I always like to joke that we see billions of dollars of requests that are reasonable and worthy requests, but there's only so much money.
This time around, of course, you had some very important issues and talking about expenditures, trying to come up with the revenue to deal with crumbling infrastructure, mainly roads and bridges and the like across the state. We have our share here in Northwest Indiana for sure, don't we?
Indeed. It's a major issue, and I know Representative Soliday has been working on this for many years and trying to establish just exactly what our cost is and where we stand. And after many studies and evaluations, we came to the conclusion we were more than $1 billion short in what it took to not only maintain what we needed, but to construct maintain what we have and construct what we need. So those are pretty big numbers. And no matter how much we try to cut the budget, we're not going to cut our way to that solution.
Mm-hmm. One of the ways I know then dealing with the infrastructure issue was to restructure how the revenues can be raised to be able to pay for all that work. We're talking about increases in the gasoline tax and some other things. And did things shape up the way that you and maybe other Republicans at the State House thought might work?
I think it worked out really well. You know, in the legislative process, we call it sausage making, and you never quite know how it's going to come out the other end. But hopefully, and I believe that was the case this time, that we end up with a pretty good result. We did add 10 cents a gallon to the gasoline tax, which hadn't been done since 2002. So this was really about getting back to the purchasing power we had at that time. You can imagine we have less consumption now than we did because more efficient automobiles, and then a loss of purchasing power over time. So we were really falling drastically behind, and it was necessary to do something. What's most important is that we move those dollars into a separate fund. It's out of the general fund, so it's not really available to be used for other things. And we had, and I think most people understand this, there was some amount of that gasoline tax used for other things. Mm-hmm. Over the next few years, we're going to have all of that moved over into road maintenance so that it is outside the general fund, so that all those revenues are committed to go to that purpose.
I know one of the other topics that had come up, and certainly of very much of interest here in Northwest Indiana, deals with the South Shore Railroad, South Shore Line, trying to make improvements that have been asked for by the operators and owners of the line to make travel easier between points here in Northwest Indiana and Chicago, and even points to the east as well, too, mainly broken down between the two projects that NICTI has set up, the double tracking, which is basically in the Gary area that deals between Gary and Michigan City, and also the improvements that have to be made on the train lines through Michigan City itself. And then, of course, we have the Westlake project, which is being proposed. Tell us what you had proposed and your colleagues at the State House to be able to make sure that the projects are staying on, literally on track. No pun intended, but making sure that the projects get done and hopefully in some semblance of order, that one thing gets done, everything else follows through.
Indeed, that's a very interesting story. I'll try to cut through it quickly. 2 years ago, we had the Westlake project, and at that point in time, the state's commitment was $6 million a year for the next 30 years. It seemed unlikely to us that we would get an additional amount of money for the double tracking. Fortunately, the new governor saw the value of connecting the mainline stops, Michigan City, South Bend, Miller Beach, and the like, to the Chicago market. And so it helped having him behind this. What we did was we came up with a mechanism that would assure the people of Indiana a real good return on their investment if they were to commit some more dollars for that purpose. And so the bill that we came up with, 1144, was one that did that, to make sure that we saw development along the line in all communities.
That was one of the important things I know that NICTI and even the Regional Development Authority had been bringing up to the session's start and through the session as well, about the importance of seeing to it that what they called, and make sure I get the termination right, transit development districts.
That's correct.
Getting them set up within the areas that are being served by the South Shore line, and in turn to help make sure that the communities around the line itself grow and prosper as well. So they see some benefit out of seeing more people on the trains, more trains running between South Bend and Chicago.
Well, we're looking to bring in private investment into these projects. And the best way to do that is to simplify the financing process. And by putting the RDA in charge of that part of it we're hoping will have a big impact. The real story here is the fact that if we had four counties involved on this, St. Joe, LaPorte, Porter, and Lake, getting four counties to agree on the sun coming up in the morning is somewhat of a challenge. And so we had to come up with a mechanism that they could all agree to on funding their share of this double tracking, and that's also included in 1144.
Now, since the measure has now become law by being signed by the governor, from what you understand from Governor Holcomb, how is the process going to come along now to make sure that the funds come into the RDA so that this project gets moving along like it should?
Well, we set up in the bill the mechanisms with multiple options for these counties on how they would participate, as well as intercept provisions that we needed to put in place if we were ever going to sell bonds. Just like any other banker, a bondholder wants to make sure that the revenue stream is there. And so all of that has been established. We didn't come back here leaving it up to the locals to try to work some things out with interlocal agreements. It's done.
What are some of the other measures that you sponsored or at least co-sponsored in this past legislative session that are now either becoming law or certainly are moving ahead now? Maybe they didn't quite make it this time around, but will likely come up and be considered in future sessions that are going to benefit Lake County in particular.
Well, one that I'm particularly proud of is we finally obtained the funding necessary for Purdue Northwest Calumet campus to replace a building that was well behind in deferred maintenance and was giving them a lot of trouble. They're going to be able to build a biosciences facility, which is going to change that campus and how it looks and how people work within it.
I know they've been working very hard to build up the academic side and encourage the programs to thrive. And I guess now you have to catch up with the physical structure, don't you?
Indeed. That campus has gone from what I like to call a community college to it's a four-year institution. They're pulling people in from all over the state and Illinois. Mm-hmm. And this is just a part of that. And of course, now we're going to have a commuter rail line that gets those students closer.
One of the other measures I know that you had sponsored and had gotten through the General Assembly this time around is dealing mainly with political parties, in this case trying to readjust the size of precincts in Lake County in particular. Tell us about the problem that you saw that in turn led you to make a bill that basically got through the legislature to try to deal with how to reconfigure the precincts in the county.
Right, and there's quite a bit of misunderstanding with that. Of course, there's a tremendous cost savings by consolidating some of these small precincts. We've all gone to the polls and seen lots of poll workers sitting there without much to do, and that's because some of these precincts have so few voters. And then, of course, with the addition of early voting, we're getting 27-28% now voting early, so that even drops those numbers further. The real issue, though, has got to do with one person, one vote. We've had a tremendous shift in population from the north to the south, and those precinct committeemen are in place basically to replace an open position. Somebody retires or leaves a position for some reason. It's the precinct organization structure that comes up with that replacement. On a countywide position, I think most people would agree they want to have their relative influence. They don't want it to be stacked in one area unreasonably because the population no longer fits the votes that they get.
Now, when do you expect to see some kind of impact, if it comes from that, in the next election coming up?
Well, I think the timing in the bill was set up so that we're not going to be forcing any existing precinct committeemen out of their position. It'll be kind of a normal restructure and election process will take place. And I think that's next year that all of that will take place in the primary.
One other thing I wanted to ask when we had a chance to talk with you here in the studio, Representative Slager, is your take on what you think are some of the issues that maybe that because there was such a strong focus on making sure some important issues were dealt with in the 2017 session, that could possibly come up in 2018.
Well, we're still trying to catch our breath on that, but we always have issues in the hopper. The things that you've talked about and we've talked about, whether it's the building at Purdue or the double tracking or the road funding, all of these issues have taken years to come along and be done and come out of the oven. It seems like a lot of them came together in this session. And so we have more of those things that are ongoing, some of which, one in particular that's close to me, has to do with pediatric care for medically complex issues here in Northwest Indiana. We have children that have to travel, if they're Medicaid patients, having to travel to Riley in Indianapolis, which is a fine hospital, because the Chicago hospitals don't get the same level of reimbursement for Medicaid the way Medicaid is structured. And so they have to travel to Riley, which it's 150 miles. But if you've got a sick child that's had chemotherapy in the car and a couple other children in the car, it's a very difficult circumstance for parents. And if they can't work, that's making it even worse.
And so I can understand, yeah, because you've got the opportunities so close by, but you can kind of understand why physicians are a little hesitant to be involved in helping patients from Indiana if they're over in Illinois and they don't get the reimbursement for the expenses they face.
Indeed, and I've had meetings with Lurie Children's and as well as Comer and trying to resolve some of the issues that are taking place with Indiana Medicaid reimbursement, and I've even had meetings with some of the institutions here in Northwest Indiana trying to encourage them to handle some of these outpatient issues for these medically complex children would be a big benefit to our region.
Do you see any encouraging signs from the discussions you've had?
I do. There's a great interest. As long as we can work through some of these reimbursement issues, I think we can see some change there. Whether or not that's going to take legislation, I don't know yet. We're still working through it.